This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina. I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And it's me, lucky number three, Zach Valenti, at your service.
And today we are joined through the magic of audio digital communication by a special guest star. It is one of the rising stars in podcast criticism, the co-creator of the Valence podcast. It's Will Williams.
Woo!
Hey, so great to have you here. How are you doing?
Doing pretty okay. Thanks for having me.
So before we jump into all of the bad ideas, of which there are many, and boy, are they bad.
Oh, there are many.
do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do, just in case some poor soul out there in the world is not yet familiar with your work?
Yeah, for sure. So I do a whole bunch of different things in the podcast space. I'm like 50% critic and 50% creator, which means I'm 100% self-critical. I write for a lot of different outlets like Polygon and Podmass, but right now I'm focusing on, I have a recurring column on Discover Pods called How to Audio Drama, where I give advice from the very basics all the way to the end of publishing an audio drama. And I am one of the co-creators of Valence, which is an urban fantasy fiction podcast.
Nice. And if you are not yet familiar with all of those, go check them out. They're all super cool and super helpful and super entertaining.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
But before we do that, we've got business to attend to here. We've got some bad ideas to turn into good stories. Every week, our hosts find some articles or internet documentation of just like really bad ideas that somebody had at some point. We bring them in, we show them to our other hosts and to our guests, and then collectively we give ourselves just 10 minutes, just 10 short, fleeting minutes to turn them into the beginnings, at least, of a good story, the sort of loose pitch concept of a good story. Are you guys ready for the first story, which I think is coming from Sarah Shackett today?
Spoilers, you're not.
Well, that's comforting.
It should be, because this is short and sweet. I highly encourage, dear listeners, you to click the link in the description, which will lead you to the best of Next Door Twitter post that I have found.
Oh, Lord. These always go Next Door, so well.
Especially in this time of times, is the place to be, apparently. and I found one that is short and sweet. It's very simple. And I think would be a great launch point for something. I'm not sure what, but that's your problem. So anyway, this is a post thread. This is a series of posts.
I see.
So as each person chimes in, you can sort of imagine an entire neighborhood coming together to solve this mystery. So Robert in Winston Park West just posts, "Loud boom? Question mark.
Promising start.
Anybody just hear a loud boom?" Todd responds, "Definitely. It shook our house." Then Brandon, "It rattled our windows. No idea where it came from, but it sounded like it was somewhere close to Harris or the Red Oak Apartments. Much too loud for a gunshot." Sarah responds, "Startled me. I thought the boom, all caps, sounded louder than a gunshot. I wonder what it was." Margaret adds in, "Almost sounded like a transformer blew, too deep and bassy for a gunshot."
What?
"Too deep and bassy for a gunshot from what it sounded like on Glen Valley." Tobias adds, Do we have an answer to what the sound was? I didn't hear it, but I'm still interested in knowing what's going on in our neighborhood. Thanks. Then the answer comes from someone named Nathan. Hey guys, sorry about the noise. I recently bought Canon from an antique store circa 1840. I shot a test round a couple days ago in my backyard, and it was louder than I expected.
What did he shoot it at?
Unclear. That is the sum total of the explanation.
Because, like, I feel that, like, you need to be keenly aware of what you're pointing Canon at before, you know...
Before Canon fires.
Right.
Sometimes you just need to shoot Canon, okay?
10 minutes on this here timer, and you can decide what he was pointing Canon at.
My God. So the first thing that comes to mind is one of those... it could be a children's story... It could be like a storybook, something like that, about sort of one of those neighborhoods that is like all the houses have to be the same and they have to be painted the exact same color. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you need to mow your grass by the 3rd of the month because otherwise you are no longer in regulation grass height. And one day, for whatever reason, like one of these guys who's been living there for 15 years and been putting up with all the town meetings and all of the like specifications about exactly what kind of stucco they can use when they reshingle their roof or whatever. One day he just kind of like takes a deep breath, looks himself in the mirror and goes, fuck it. And he goes and he buys himself a Canon because that's something that like he's always wanted. And the rest of the town is horrified.
I kind of want the like Tiger King style documentary of the Canon, like the antique Canon market in in Texas.
Right. oh, my God. This was happening in Texas, wasn't it? I had forgotten about that part of it.
Keep Austin weird.
Oh, my God. Well, they're doing their part to keep it weird. That's for sure.
Man, our brains went in opposite directions because I heard all of this and my brain thought, well, it's aliens is the noise naturally. Mm-hmm. And then even though it was canon, my brain was still stuck on unnatural nature of noise and it's still aliens. And there's here about aliens putting them into the past with canons. There's something.
There is something about, don't worry, guys. It was just an antique cannon going off that like fine. A little bit smells like a cover up, doesn't it?
Right, right. I mean, that is written as a normal excuse and then is not. So I think aliens is as plausible as anything.
You know, just last week, Eric Silver was on the show saying that, if I remember correctly, it would be illegal for us to do a podcast without aliens in it, or without space in it, at least, I think it was.
Right.
So I'm
right.
Glad that the brand continues to be strong.
Absolutely. Now we can add in time travel. Just like we can put, can we make audio drama of this event that involves all the audio drama tropes? This is my challenge to us right now.
My God.
Okay, so capitalism is the enemy. Everybody is gay, which you're for it. There are aliens, but they don't behave like normal aliens. I'm gonna say that they're like totally chill and normal. And
I was
again,
gonna say,
part
like
of the cover up.
Like in general, aliens in audio fiction tend to be strange more than they're like evil. Like you don't see a lot of kind of we are here to eat human brains, kind of Mars Attack style aliens.
Right. It's almost like audio drama creators, by and large, think differently about narratives of quote unquote invasion and, right. You know, space colonization, et cetera. So it's got to be
space.
What
a concept. Okay, cool. So let's run with aliens. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of begin ground level. Who is the protagonist? Is the protagonist one of the aliens, or is the protagonist kind of the guy that hears the boom and decides to investigate and kind of discovers this conspiracy?
I think it's got to be guy who hears boom. I think that's a great inciting incident, is awakened by very surreal, very loud non-gunshot boom.
Right. And it's just like at the point in his emotional life where he can't let this go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Needs to know the answer.
I don't know. Is it Kevin Cannon Collector
McGee, who happens to have a very large property filled
with
beautiful cannons from history. In fact, it may be off the highway with one of those signs, largest cannon museum in America.
And so he knows what a cannon sounds like, and he's here to tell you that wasn't no cannon, bro.
Well, right. I mean,
and
when he hears the boom, he has to see, was it the kids that break onto his his land and set off his cannons? That didn't sound right. And then, lo and behold, there are some really chill, not at all evil aliens.
And they are like the first people who really get his canon obsession.
Mm-hmm. They do become a found family. That is mandatory.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's strange because he loves cannons, but not kind of as a weapon. He kind of loves them as these like objects, the art, but of engineering.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he doesn't like their destructive side of it. He kind of just likes them for their kind of awesome feats of engineering.
Mm-hmm. Right. He will like wax poetic about the siege of Constantinople and like the cannons that were beautifully wrought and like, you know, leaps of engineering that went further and further just to like create these objects. Yeah. I love it.
Nobody likes to go to his museum though, because all the kids are always like, when are you going to blow something up? Yeah. Shoot something. And he's always
cannons
like, no,
for
no,
shooting.
That's not the point of the
cannons right? are not for shooting. I love
it. No. The art.
Cannons are for collecting.
Exactly. And so he bonds with the aliens because they also don't see them as destructive items, I guess.
Yeah, maybe they're like a totally post-war culture and they're here to look at these weapons and this ingenuity of engineering and just be reverent about it and not use them.
Do the aliens have a specific goal besides just like learning and enrichment?
I think that is probably an ET thing of they meant to visit for a very brief time, but they are now stuck here. And at the end of the movie, our protagonist has to give up his precious cannons so that they can be the propulsion behind the space alien craft that will let them get away from home. So he needs to sacrifice his precious cannons.
Beautiful.
Well, you have about 2 minutes 50 left. Is the bad guy the banker who
capitalism.
Wants to buy the land?
Or, bad guy is capitalism.
I mean,
gotta
yes,
be capitalism.
More specifically.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely the mortgage company that sold the property in a predatory loan. And so they, you know, they want their land back. And and if you don't have the land, you don't have the cannons.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And so it's like sort of like, can we refinance this mortgage / destroy the you know, sort of evil banking system before the auction starts on Monday?
Oh, man, but if he has to give up that cannon, wouldn't they kind of win? Because now he doesn't need the land. Doesn't need the land.
I think that it may be sort of one of these, like, and this is problematic in a kind of way, but if it's going to go that route, then it needs to kind of end in this place of, he sort of realizes that all of these things that he thought were so important and that kind of gave him self-worth, that like, you know, like, I'm here and I own this property and I own these things. And he was like, no, that's not what gives me value. I'm what gives me value.
Mm-hmm.
Which admittedly, the bank may still be going, that's very, very nice
sure,
of you. Please leave by 5 p.m. You know, like,
so, yeah, are you,
make
are you
sure
saying
you take
that-
everything.
That he turns his...
Or he has to put on, like, the greatest cannon show ever in order to raise the money to save the land. And now that he has the land, he has to give up the cannons. I'm just saying.
Oh, so tragic.
Wait, Zach, what were you going to say?
I was going to say... Is his solution to turn his remaining cannon inventory into a mobile tiny home? And he just, like, you know,
wow,
flips the bankers the bird while he drives off
into public use land.
He lights up for the territory.
And you thought that motorcycles were loud. Just wait until you hear the cannonmobile.
30 seconds left. What's it called?
It's cannon.
I think it's canon is kind of perfect.
I'm not coming up with anything better than that.
It's even missing the article and is a pun.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Perfect. Well, that's time. Guys.
Wait, Sarah, I'm curious. Yeah. And this is a good alternate title. What does the greatest canon show anyone's ever put on? What does that look like? Like, what is involved in a canon show?
You just fire a bunch of cannons.
And just hope for the best.
But you, like, maybe dye the gunpowder so that when the smoke emerges, it's multicolored.
I thought it was just going to be like, maybe you die. And I was like, no, you definitely die. Like, yeah. If you're just shooting up a bunch of cannons, you for sure die.
But it's the friends we make along the way.
That's right.
Well, we're going to go find some things along the way and be back right after this.
Hello, everybody. Zach Valenti breaking into this episode real quick with this brief message. It is a wild time in the world. And one thing that's keeping us sane here at No Bad Ideas HQ is making no bad ideas for you. From the practicalities of remembering what day it is because we have to schedule recording sessions, to the tactical mental health benefits of social interaction with good friends. And another thing that makes a huge difference for us making No Bad Ideas is your support on Patreon. If listening to this show is making a difference for you and you're in a position to give, we'd really appreciate it if you'd go to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already contribute to our Patreon, thank you. It helps us keep the lights on and cover some of our overhead costs associated with making this show. Once more, you can find our Patreon to sign up at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. All right, now back to No Bad Ideas.
All right, everybody, welcome back to No Bad Ideas featuring special guest star Will Williams. And we are here now for our second bad idea of the day. How would you guys feel about something a little spooky?
Ooh,
always good.
You know, my middle name is not legally spooky, but maybe I'll use some of this quarantine time to change it.
Great. Well, I wish you luck with that endeavor, Zach. But in the meantime,
what you want to do in quarantine is contend with the bureaucracy.
Yeah, really. In the meantime, I'm going to take us onto the endeavor of a man who is in a very unusual situation. This article comes to us courtesy of Sky News. And if you'd like to read along, dear listener, there's a link in the episode description. I think that this is going to be more effective if I don't tell you what the headline is until later. And I'm going to warn you right now. It's going to seem at first like this is just like somebody that had some bad luck and there's not really a bad idea here. We'll get to the bad idea. Don't you worry. There's a bad idea here.
Okay.
Good to know.
I'm excited.
All right. So skipping the headline, going straight into the article. Brent Underwood says he has been resorting to melting snow for water after his week-long stay in Cerro Gordo, California, was unexpectedly and significantly prolonged by the nationwide coronavirus lockdown measures. He told Sky News he had arrived during good weather a month ago, but that four consecutive days of snow had left him stuck there in solitude ever since. Quote, I think one morning I woke up and saw the snow was over my truck, and I thought, what have I got myself into? He said. I managed to calm myself down by the following day and decided I would just use my time here productively. I'm definitely social isolating, at least. Having bought all of the former silver mining town for 1.1 million euros.
Wait,
It was a former silver mining town, then like no more silver mining. And then our man, Brent Underwood, bought it for $1.4 million.
He pulled a Schitt's Creek.
In 2018 when he bought it.
That is the premise of that show.
He had mainly left the town in the hands of full-time caretaker of 21 years, Robert Desmaris. But restrictions designed to curb the spread of COVID-19 began. The 32-year-old marketer agreed to take over the upkeep of the 400-acre space for a week, while Mr. Desmaris, the appointed townkeeper, visited Arizona to check on his wife. It is 26 miles from the nearest grocery store. But four feet of snow means traveling any further than a few hundred yards is currently impossible. And despite previously being a skeptic, Mr. Underwood said his experiences during his time alone in the 22-building town had led him to believe the rumors that it is haunted. He said the town had once been the subject of an episode of the TV show Ghost Adventures, which concluded it was haunted. By the ghost of two children who died after being trapped in a closet. He said, apart from the ghosts and maybe a few bobcats, I'm alone. So I've been having visitors, but not necessarily welcome ones. I've heard some strange sounds, and I had a book fall off a shelf for no apparent reason. While he has no more fresh food, such as bread, vegetables, Mr. Underwood said he had enough rice and tinned goods to survive until conditions allow travel in and out of town. It's quite cold and I'm quite hungry, but I know there are lots of people around the world in a far worse position, he said. What follows in the rest of the article are kind of a couple of things that he's doing to keep himself kind of sharp and aware of things. The important thing to note is how bad both the internet connection and the cell phone service are in Cerro Gordo, this haunted silver town that this man bought and is now trapped in. So with all of that said, I can now tell you what the actual headline is. Man forced to isolate alone in ghost town with murderous past after being snowed in.
Yeah, that's a good one to hold on to.
A headline.
Yeah, right?
Oh my God. Talk about giving it away in the trailer.
So,
a literal ghost town. Bless.
10 minutes on the clock starting now. How do we turn this into a good Shining knockoff?
I mean, I Schitt's Creek is still stuck in my head. So like ghost sitcom.
Yeah.
Does anyone see a problem with a ghost sitcom?
No. So walk us through the basic idea of Schitt's Creek, because I have not seen the show.
Oh, it's so good. So Schitt's Creek is kind of up the alley of Arrested Development, in which a very rich family bought a town as a joke. They lose all of their money and assets and then are forced to move to the town and live there. And it's very like podunked. It's literally called Schitt's Creek.
I see.
So yeah, I think ghost sitcom is killer. And if it's like a real ghosts versus dude, because they're like, you bought this place and then ignored it for a million years. you suck. You've done nothing for us. We've been trapped here.
And also, so, like, you're leaving your rice out. Dude.
Yeah. Also, like, melting snow is not sanitary. Like, how to do water.
I see.
Yeah,
I see.
It would be nice if the ghosts know more about how to survive than this person does. And so, like, the ghosts are trying to keep him alive.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And
I love it.
From making terrible choices.
Sort of like Bear Grylls style. Just like.
Like the episode of Bear Grylls, which this is a real episode, where he took, like, Will Ferrell up a mountaintop. And like taught him how to survive, kind of.
Oh, man.
What a decision to make by everyone involved.
Everyone involved in that made choices. But anyway.
So, yeah, there's like a little bit of a like forced improvement slash forced growth kind of a narrative.
Right.
Here.
Right. Right. And the key is just like snowed in, or like there's an earthquake and the bridge is out. So the human cannot leave this place. And the human is there alone. They have bought like their fortress of solitude.
I love the idea that not only are the ghosts dead, but still know how to be alive more than he does. They're also children.
Well, you know, it was Frontiers times. You had had to be up on things.
16, what is that line in What We Do in the Shadows? I was turned into a vampire when I was 16. It was quite hard to be a 16-year-old then.
Right.
That's funny.
No, and I also love the dynamic, if we kind of hold on to this, from the real story of this is kind of the land baron that has owned it from afar for a long time. Mm-hmm. And probably just kind of thought it was cool to own a like real, you know, like old timey ghost town.
And I'm sure it's beautiful up there. Like, you know, you go up for a week to like do some reading, sit by a fireplace, and then you get back on your private jet to London or whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
But, you know, doesn't have any like attachment and roots to the place, which these ghosts definitely do because they're still there because they're ghosts.
Kind of feels like Jack London trying to talk to Walt Whitman, you know, like,
oh, my gosh.
Like, no, you're not living off the land. You have no connection to this. You just go to town every week. I almost die every day because I love it. I love that thrill of almost dying in the wilderness. Yeah, having him actually get connected with how to survive and the place that he owns now, I think is great.
Yeah, I'm just, the thing I'm trying to figure out is like, is sort of the parallel story of like, do the ghosts want anything, or what is unresolved about them that keeps them as ghosts in this place?
My stab at that would be, say, like, if all of the people, if we can kind of abstract a little bit more and we move away from kind of they were murdered, maybe the entire town was kind of a family that sort of like moved out here to establish this town. Something happened, maybe a flood, maybe some kind of disease, some bad food. Everyone kind of died. And there is this dynamic of kind of by going to establish this kind of frontiers town, they isolated themselves from society. They kind of cut themselves off from the world and kind of moving on to the Coco-esque, you know, afterlife is in a way kind of going back to society and going back to kind of having to interact with people. And so kind of our living human needs to figure out how to actually be alone without society. The ghosts kind of need to be reminded of how to be a part of something bigger than themselves.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's parallel journeys.
There you go. Yes. Now, what's the scope of this? Is this like a 5-year TV show? Is this a, you know, movie? Is this kind of a like 8-episode miniseries?
Epistolary novel.
Yeah.
I'm curious how it would work as an epistolary novel.
Dear like, Gertrude, the ghosts were out again today.
No. And the ghost letters are like written in blood on the wall. Like, how does that work? I don't know how serialized it is. What do you think, Will?
I like the idea of like a self-contained mini series, maybe like maximum 3-season TV show. I like leaning hard into the sitcom angle. Maybe we can bring up those Bobcats as like a recurring joke. Like every time he tries to go out and he's like, oh, maybe not so much snow. It's just filled with Bobcats, just miles of Bobcats.
But they're kind of like asshole Bobcats instead of like dangerous Bobcats. They're like that boar in Lost that like messed around with Sawyer, but never actually did any damage. Like they're kind of like more prankster animals than like dangerous predators.
I like the sitcom angle of it for sure.
Sweet. So, yeah, I don't think this would have legs after more than 3 or 4 seasons, though.
Even that much is a little bit of like,
it's a little much.
Boy, this blizzard sure is going on for a long time.
This could finally be the time where we have a 24 style sitcom that just takes place in real time.
Wow.
But is funny instead of an action thriller thing.
I mean, it could be also first season ends with Blizzard being over. Second season, he's already kind of married to this town. He wants to improve it. And now he has to bring other people in who also don't get it, read the newspaper article, and they're like, oh, ghost town, how exciting. And he's like, no. No, you have to learn.
This is a town with ghosts.
Yes. Oh, no. And then, like, all the ghosts have to put up with all the idiot tourists that show up. And they're just kind of like,
oh, my God.
This is exactly why we left, you know, St. Louis.
It's a gentrification story.
Oh, man.
No, I hate
it. Oh, no.
The ghosts are getting pushed out by people who think it's just an empty town. Just like, motherfucker, I live here.
Technically, you lived here, but I'm still here. Like, here I am.
Squatter's rights.
The kids wouldn't be drinking alcohol because of how frontier times the water
I think
is.
We can adjust both, like, the number of ghosts involved, because I think there has to be more than two.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And also the ages. Like, you can have a couple kids, but also you can have people who are contemporaneous with this Walt Whitman type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of imagining a very kind of like Tuck Everlasting kind of family that is like a central figure,
totally.
But kind of like different ages of sons and daughters, maybe like an uncle, like, you know, kind of like
a matriarch.
Periphery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. How much time do we have?
You have a minute and 18 seconds to tell me either how it ends or what it is called or both.
Okay, I have a take here that might be controversial. I think it ends with this pro tag dying.
I was exactly thinking that.
Becoming
no,
a ghost?
That's where my head was at.
Yeah, becoming a ghost and joining more or less this family and this tradition of getting these obnoxious people out of this town.
I think, though, that, like, all the other ghosts need to, like, move on to whatever lies beyond, and then he stays on as the new ghost.
Mm-hmm. So,
right. And if he's had a love interest, then that person can stay as well. And they like build their new ghost family.
Okay.
But you're right. Most of the ghosts need to go on.
Yeah.
Can it be called New Ghost Family? Because that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. New Ghost Who Dis would be my variation on that. But before that, I was thinking maybe There Goes the Neighborhood. But I kind of like
There Ghost the Neighborhood.
Oh, that's even better.
Nope, never mind. I hate it. We're not doing this idea anymore. Let me pull up a new one. This one is officially canceled. It never happened. Not once, not for a moment. And that is time.
Fantastic.
All right. Very nicely done. Way to run as far away from spooky as it was possible to run while still dealing with the idea. But that was great.
Thank you for bringing it. That was good material.
Yeah, it was a delight.
Oh, yeah. No, that's one of those you read an article sometimes and you're just like, yes, like, this is going to go in the show. This is
that's
awesome. Well, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in, Will. Thank you for being here. We're
yes,
going to be
you so much.
Thank you.
Back on Thursday of this week for a little bit more with Will Williams, a little bit of a conversation about the world of creativity and other creative pursuits, I suppose. Till then, stay safe.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.